Yeah, I realise it's a bit of a challenge at the end of the day. So again, just feel free to be sitting still more in a way. So do feel free to move and stretch and take care of your bodies and shift the chairs as you need. So I wanted to, I'm going to sort of touch on three separate things in this talk, and it may or may not hang well together, but we'll see how we go. I wanted to just spend a little bit of time with this phrase, freed from personal attachment. It's a phrase we use in the retreat description for these four kinds of love, freed from personal attachment. And so we both sort of alluded to the sense of self and noticing the sense of self that arises in the various ways, some of the ways it can arise. And like I said about desire, the orientation isn't about getting rid of the sense of self or problem making it a problem, but more just the seeing how it shows up. And a very simple way I find helpful to do that is, something you may notice as well, is that when you're on retreat or at some time of meditation, and the sense of craving lessens a little bit, maybe you have moments of peace or ease, so the craving has softened. And you might notice also that the sense of me or meanness, I don't mean a correlation with meanness, meanness, was also quieter. There might still be some sort of subtle essence of there's a being here, a location of consciousness here, but as there's a correlation between when the craving can be, such a craving can sort of soften and feel regulated, open, we can open, feel some sense of opening, the sense of self is also quieter. And I just wanted to share a quote with you about that for me speaks to what might be the experience instead of being more defined sense of me in a dynamic of wanting and not wanting. I think what happens when we open beyond these closed loops of our habitual tendencies is we start to feel there's an inherent flow to experience, in a way, an inherent dynamism. Even in the contracting and opening. So in the universe, in the world, in nature, opening and closing are happening all the time. There's an inherent dynamism. And that, you know, so we have moments when we practice where we feel more in that kind of almost like fluid quality. And there's also a way where you can feel that flow gets somewhat arrested by our attitude, our beliefs, our views. Like, for instance, we judge something as wrong, shouldn't be this way. But we can actually access the flow again by being curious and in touch with where it's got fixed. One of my teachers said, when you're stuck, it's like if a car is stuck in a ditch, it's only a problem if you want to get out. We're not meeting the flow that is, which is that there's something fixed in this moment, something not moving. And we can very much see how habits of thinking or habits of reactivity, they're a closed flow. They're flowing, but they're kind of flowing in a repetitive groove. I see this a bit like... I often use this I'm going to be repetitive now. People have heard me give this analogy before, but it just came to me as an analogy for practice, and that is imagine the mind like a river. So a river with different currents, different eddies, different banks in it, and our practice, when we're learning about the mind, is come and sit on the bank of the river. Come to meet our experience, the flows in it. And we even learn how to step into the river and to feel the flows, but keep our feet on the riverbed. So if the flows are very strong, helps to be not so deep in. Of course, we can't always easily calibrate this, but just staying with the metaphor. So we feel like how to lower our centre of gravity, how to feel our centre as we are experiencing the currents in the river, which is the momentum of the flows of our... Things have just got hold of us in our lives. Views, tendencies, ways of defending ourselves, ways we feel we believe we need to protect, defend ourselves. So much of our... I notice this in myself, so much of my defensiveness is trying to defend a sense of me. I want to be seen a certain way, yeah. And I rely on that. There's a relying on that. And sometimes the question I ask myself when I feel defensive or offended, I ask myself, "What am I protecting right now?" Not to again dishonor the sensitivity and the wobble, but actually to also recognise it's a particular way I've taken myself to be that feels like it needs protecting or defending. It's not the whole of reality. And so this, just continuing this metaphor of the river, the places in where we feel like a closed loop is running, it's that sense of reaction. We're not really meeting what's happening in the moment, we are meeting it with a habitual response. You can feel how thoughts run, thoughts of sort of grudges or irritations, certain things that just bug us or press our buttons. It's like literally like that button gets pressed and then the program runs. And in the river, the eddies, these closed loops, they look solid, they look like they are something. You know, so there's something happening in the river which has a sort of substantiality to it, this eddy, this mini whirlpool. But actually, the water running through that whirlpool is never the same water, because each moment never happened before. But it's very rare, isn't it, for us to feel the truth of that, even though when I say it, you probably sense it. It's each moment is completely new, never happened before. And that's what we lose touch with, that dynamism. Through meeting the moment through the layers of the past. But what is very beautiful is as we start to notice that and see, we start to be able to discern what the qualities of a reaction. It always has a certain charge to it. And that charge takes many different sort of shapes and forms of moods and feelings. And I feel a lot of my practice has been about learning how to meet different qualities of mind and heart and body with awareness. And that also has a relationship with capacity, and also knowing how to back up when the capacity isn't there to meet the mood that's here or meet the feeling that's here. So that's what you've all been doing, really, and sharing with us as you meet with us in the groups as well. But I thought I see this process. It's almost like a process of unlayering. So it's shifting from the metaphor of the river. Unlayering. It's like when we start a retreat or start a meditation, it's almost like we kind of start somewhere on the surface of where we are, or with the thing that is most apparent, the thing that most grabs our attention. But as we stay with that, acknowledge that, and are present to that, we come a fraction closer to where we are. It's almost like we meet the layer beneath that. We come a fraction closer, and as we do, we kind of feel more and more our centre is here as we are moving through those layers. So it's like we meet the layers of contraction or holding on. So I thought I'd give you a few examples, so it's easier with examples, a few stories. So I thought I'd share one about personal attachment. For your benefit. So I was thinking about your question about intimacy or eros, and I was remembering, this one response to it, I was remembering that when I lived as a celibate for quite a few years in the monastery, some of those times I had the most intimate experience of relationship and connection. There's something about the layers where we don't quite see of our what we project onto the other, or what we're looking for from outside, of different layers of attachment that actually separate us from each other. So I'll share a couple of stories around this. So this one is I had a teacher, who was a very significant teacher to me, and when I first moved to the monastery, and a really strong attachment to this teacher. And we had a monk visiting, and this monk was he was over 100, he didn't exactly know how old he told me about 110, moved incredibly slowly. And I went to tea with him, and I asked him about this attachment to this teacher. And while this monk was visiting, he was visiting, while he was staying at the monastery, he had two other visiting monks from America. They were from a monastery called the City of 10,000 Buddhas, Mahayana monastery, and they were also visiting, and they were actually supporting this monk, taking care of him. So they didn't know each other, only been living together for about 2 weeks. And because Bhante Dhammara was quite elderly and quite deaf, I had to be quite close to him as well, so I'm quite close to him just asking this question. And he looked at me, and it's quite a strong answer, and maybe not the most, see how this wording lands with you. He looked at me, but he looked at me with such compassion, and he said, "Don't you know all attachment is wrong?" Wrong is a tricky word, probably not one we would put out there here, but unhelpful, will cause you suffering. And then he looked at me, and I felt with such love, he looked at me and he said, "Do you see these monks? I love them and they love me." And you could really see it. I could really see it. So he wasn't telling me love was wrong. In fact, I think I was quite caught up in the attachment was making the love wrong. So it actually freed me to allow my love. Allow the love. And notice where it got caught in projections and clinging and wanting and all of that. Be more interested in that. So I want to share another story in the same arena with the same issue. I've worked on this for a few years, very deep attachment. Just an example of sort of moving through the layers and the flow, actually being with the fixed flow. And that, how that changes the flow. So this is a story about jealousy. Who's heard this story from me? A few people probably. Jealousy. I have a limited repertoire of stories. Once you've heard them all, you won't come back. same monk. And a lot of very strong projection. This monk had a friendship with one of the other nuns, and this, when I saw it, would bring up really painful jealousy for me. And I felt very uncomfortable about this. I was also a nun. I didn't want anybody to know I had this horrible feeling of jealousy. You know, I didn't want to know I was a jealous person. I didn't want that judgment. I judged myself and I projected that judgment onto others as coming back at me. So it was definitely, jealousy was wrong. And I tried all sorts of ways to deal with it, and they didn't work. They didn't work. And then one evening, we were in a situation like this, where this particular monk was giving a Dharma talk, and I noticed at the end of the Dharma talk, there was a moment where he caught this nun's eye, and they just had a moment of friendliness. Had this pang of jealousy, really strong pang of jealousy. And because we get drip-fed all this stuff we've been drip-feeding you about turn towards me, open, don't judge. Eventually, I actually felt that even that capacity to let... I made sort of more of a resolve to really turn towards it, and there was a capacity to do that. And it was in the monastery, we used to do these long night sits, so we sit up to midnight, and it's one of those nights. So I really decided to sort of turn towards this feeling. Initially, I had to just meet the deep belief that it was wrong and it was not okay. Just recognize how much I believed that. And then also how much I didn't want it. So I think I even said to myself, I really want this feeling to go away. I really don't like this feeling. Sometimes when I'm in a process where I'm contemplating with people, I'm doing a one-to-one, and there's something where they have a lot of ambivalence or difficulty with being with, I sometimes suggest experimenting with imagining it on the floor in front of you. And I think I did that with this jealousy, just imagined it on the floor in front of me and just asked myself, how do I feel towards this? And in that moment it was almost complete rejection. And just also including that. So it's kind of naming what's here, meeting what's here, meeting the layers. And gradually I started to connect the pain. Actually, this jealousy was simply an experience of pain, deep unease that I felt in my heart. And it was somewhat more bearable because I wasn't attacking myself for having it anymore. I was just more meeting it directly, that feeling, the feeling and the feeling, the tonality of it. And as I felt it, what I sensed was a wanting. And I asked myself, what does my heart want, or what does it want? And it wanted that quality of friendship and being met or being seen that I saw in that look between them. And I realized, and then my heart felt that that's human. That's not a bad person, that's just human. And then there was some compassion. So the metta is like that quality of really what is it to open to something and meet it, and then it kind of informs us. So it reveals more about itself. And I also realized in that very process I was experiencing meeting and connecting because I was meeting and connecting, or the awareness, or the attention was attuned. And I felt less and less need for that. The need had sort of dropped away for that from outside. And I connected to the sense that everybody wants this. Like I said just a moment ago, it's human. And actually, she needs this and wants this as much as me. And instead of seeing her as in the way of me getting that, I felt an empathy or a sameness or a togetherness with her. So we're deeply conditioned to believe that the goods come from outside. And of course we need support, we need friendship. Buddha said it was key. Sangha, community, spiritual friendship, absolutely essential. It's not about not having support from outside. But it's more about seeing how that gets that movement gets very habituated. So my whole focus was I can only receive this from him. I get it from outside. And then at a certain point, because it's outside and it's conditions beyond my control, at a certain point it's just not going to conform to my wishes, whatever it is I'm looking for from outside. And then I can either struggle with that or fight with that, or meet what's here right now and what's showing up and let that guide me through this. So the jealousy, the antidote to jealousy in the Buddha's teaching, is the next quality we're going to touch upon, which is appreciation. Gladness. And that was actually what had opened in my heart. I actually felt, at least somebody's getting this from outside. Even if it's not me. You know, actually genuinely. So we can either both actually cultivate recollecting the nature of these qualities, which Soha has been so beautifully offering, and we can also see the obstacles as the channel, the thread we follow that leads us home. So we don't have a choice about what's arising, but we can sort of recollect this, something Soha also said, that it's not a personal failing what's arising, it's just what's arising, it's not mine. And trust in developing our ability to follow the thread of meeting what's arising and allowing that to inform us and take us a layer deeper and a little closer to what we need to hear that's not yet being heard or seen or understood. So I wanted to say, on a completely different topic, for about 5 minutes, maybe related, I wanted to talk about overwhelm and backing up. It's particularly, I think, really relevant for compassion. You know, different mind states need different kinds of energy and effort to bring presence to. It's sort of different skills help with them. And some places in us are like they're very painful, feel very wounded. It really helps to go very slow and very gently rather than dive in. That kindness is to be really gentle with ourselves around those places, really not pushing. And we will find moments where we can meet those places too, where we have the energy, we have the inner space. But what increases our vessel is not living at the edge of the difficult places. If we can, we notice at the edge, it can be so tempting to stay there, you know, we want to move through something. But it can be actually more skillful if we feel like it's an edge, even before we get tired or a bit worn down with it, to back up. So different ways of backing up are, can we notice some part of our experience that doesn't feel afflicted? And sometimes, so that might be actually just noticing how the space in the room, or a part of our body that feels easeful, more easeful. Or changing our posture to bring more ease and support. Or consciously distracting ourselves. If it's really strong and really compelling, actually consciously taking our attention for a long walk or out into the garden. Or, you know, just letting yourself have a rest. So, or do some body work. It makes me think of, years ago, getting some funny advice about what would help me ground, if, you know, because I was just in a place where I was spinning out. And what this monk suggested to me was to stand on one leg. Stand on one leg, because you have to really sort of find your centre of gravity, you know, and you really feel that you lower your centre of gravity, you know. So it's partly why that shifting from one foot to the other and feeling that, it's actually grounding. So it sounds a bit banal, but our energies get very sensitive and we're very affectable, and very powerful things come into our inner terrain. We gradually discover how to be with many, many different kinds of mind states. It becomes less of an agenda about getting to the good stuff, what we call the good stuff, but more about how, as we learn to be in a more equanimous relationship, not favouring or opposing, not grasping or rejecting, knowing how to even hold those states, we feel a little more the vessel that can let things move through it. And another aspect of backing up is being able to say no. Have a boundary. So we talk a lot about acceptance, but actually sometimes it's just knowing, okay, this is really not the time to go there. It's part of taking our attention elsewhere. Okay. There's so much more we could say about boundaries and anger. It's another really important place to explore, but maybe tomorrow. So probably enough for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.